Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick, Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law you watch me cover on television every day and visit the world of, well, I often say theater and the arts. This is all of that and more, because in having seen a show recently called The Unfair Advantage, I don't know what you expect from magicians and theater, but you don't. You won't expect this, and it's going to blow your mind. So let me say hi to my guest. It's a one-man show, and his name is Harry Milas, and he joins me now. And you're joining me here, but you're from Australia, Harry.
That's right. Yeah, I'm from Sydney originally. That's where I've been operating pretty much my whole professional life. So it's a real pleasure to be here.
And by the way, I have climbed the Harbour Bridge, so that gives us a special bond.
That's great. And that's where we do the show when we're in Sydney. We do the show in the pylon of the Harbour Bridge looking down onto Circular Quay. So we know the bridge climb people well. They work with us well.
Yeah, oh, I love that. They're very nice and it's all safe. If you go there and people want to go to Australia, go climb the bridge. It's perfectly safe.
It is. It's a great time.
Because I was a wreck. Anyway, so first of all, let's talk about what you do, The Unfair Advantage, because you are a magician, but that just puts you in the category of magicians. You do something that I have never seen anybody else do, certainly not in a performance way. You're a cheater.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. You know, like, I think it's best when you try to create a piece of theater. If it's yours, then it should come from your own history and your own life. And so that is my history. Like, really, most of my teenage years were kind of in the gray area between the magic world and the gambling and cheating world. And really where I kind of first fell in love with sleight of hand was in the gambling world. So yeah, the show is kind of about the intersection between those two worlds and how I kind of fit between those two worlds.
So, I told somebody just yesterday, I was telling somebody about what you did, and the way I liked to word it, because it was fun, was to sort of say, oh, and he'll show you how to cheat at cards and whatever. And he kind of made me think, well, that's not right. I went, well, that's not exactly true, because first of all, you'll never be able to do what he does. But secondly, your message isn't really, if we're going to be honest about it, you're not trying to teach us how to cheat at cards. You're trying to show us how it's done. And essentially, your related career was to catch people who were doing that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And, I think, you know, I mean, look, to be completely honest, I'm aware of the fact that the show has a hook of, you know, people coming in to learn cheating technique. And the truth is that, as you would attest, you've seen the show, like, I do explicitly show cheating moves.
Yeah.
And how they're used in the game. But I think, to your point, like, maybe the thing that we don't mention in when we advertise the show is that it takes 15 years to refine these techniques to the point where they're going to be undetectable. But no, it's an interesting thing to be able to show people quite explicitly these gambling secrets, which is why you sign a contract of confidentiality before you come in and watch the show.
You do. I've got it right here.
There it is. That's it. That's the contract.
But so here's what, and you know, I wrote a great review of your show and I make the point, and I'm just going to be honest with you. I sort of said, yes, you'll sign this contract, you know, sort of saying that, you know, you recognize that gambling, cheating in casinos is unlawful. But I just have to say again, anybody who thinks they're going to watch you for an hour and master the technique, I now know what you're doing. I can't do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, to that point, that's why the show is close up. That's why the show's for 35 people at a time around the table, because, you know, I'm doing like this, I'm doing sleight of hand, like with my hands like this. So it's important, I think, that you're as close as you can be when you see it, because, you know, I think when I wanted to design a show to bring here to the States, you know, we were talking about larger scale shows and other things that we could talk about. And I certainly don't think that magic doesn't work on a big stage or doesn't work on television or on YouTube. There's great examples of that working, but I haven't seen many good examples of close-up magic working theatrically. So we wanted to find a way to make that work. And to be honest, the solution turned out to be just doing 11 shows a week, which is amazing and I love, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, the typical, of course, show would be eight shows a week, and you're not in it. But here's the thing, it was interesting because I thought, well, you must be more comfortable and maybe your experience is working because it's a limit of 35 people who are going to attend each show. But as I read more about you, I mean, first of all, you also do improv.
Yeah. Australia has a very, very rich vein of improv that came directly from Chicago. We have a lot of people that would come over and teach. We have a lot of people that would come here for Second City. And so, yeah, I have a big history in improv and doing a lot of what we call theater sports, which I think you guys would call like improv Olympic, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that has certainly, you know, and that was a big part of my career. At a certain point around COVID, I kind of had to end up choosing between one or the other. And so I haven't been able to do it in a little while, but there was a good stretch of time there where I was doing just as much improv as I was doing magic. And I think it's also really paid off well when it comes to doing a magic show like this one, which is, you know, it's not, it is scripted in the sense that I know where the show is going each night, but it's incredibly interactive. And the show is designed for people to interject, to challenge, to ask questions. And having that improv background means that that can happen quite authentically. And each show is kind of different at that point. You know, each show is unique.
Yeah. And by the way, when I talk about improv, I mean, you performed in front of audiences of 2,000 people. So, you know, when mm-hmm. you come here, I mean, I think when people hear improv here, they think of Second City. Mm-hmm. By the way, while you're here, when you get a night off, are you seeing Second City? Are you, you know, Close Up Magic was invented here in Chicago. Are you?
It really was. Yeah.
Are you seeing any of the Magic Lounge or, you know, there's so many magic shows here.
You guys go hard with your magic here. There's so much magic going on in Chicago, which is awesome. And there's so many people here that I'm a huge fan of. And yeah, I mean, doing 11 shows a week means that I'll be turning up to the places like the Magic Lounge, you know, later in the evening. But I'm definitely really excited to get to all of these places and you know, just see people that I've been a fan of for a long time doing their thing in their city, you know. And I've also reached out to a lot of the local people that work here and just said, hello, I'm a guy coming to your city to do a show. And I've had nothing but the nicest, you know, welcome from all of these people. There's been a lot of support, which is lovely as well.
So glad to hear. And by the way, if you call in sick for your show next Wednesday, it's an opening night at Magic Lounge. You could be my guest and I'll take you over there.
I love that.
The latest opening night. They also have a room called the 654 Club. Do you know the story of the 654?
I don't know.
I think it's a big Chicago story. I'm not going to waste our time here, but when you get there, when you talk to somebody, talk about, they'll take you into the 654 room. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's a special historic story. But let's go back to you. The other thing I didn't know you did, and there's some great people here who do this, but like the mind reading stuff. Mark Toland here, who's one of the great mind readers in this town and stuff. And I've never understood how it blows my mind because I know there's some trick to it. and you make the point in your show when you talk about the distinction between the cheating, I don't know what else to call it except the cheating piece of the show and the magic piece of the show. And you say that you do both of those things because the whole idea is in magic, people shouldn't know how you do it. Whereas in the cheating, you want us to know how you do it. And I've always thought the reality is if you actually told me how you did the magic part of things, and I've had other magicians tell me that, I'd be really disappointed in what it took.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You're right. There's never been a secret to a magic trick that is more interesting than the effect it produces. I think we intuitively know this as well. I think that we see a piece of magic. We want to know how it's done. That's part of the joy of magic, is to be presented with a mystery. But I think we also know that, like, when you break it down, it's almost always just like, oh, really? That was it? That's all it was, you know? And mind reading is a really interesting subcategory in that, because people go, well, you know, he could have made the ace of spades appear, you know, jump out of his pocket 15 different ways. I have a whole deck of ace of spades. Like, people can imagine different solutions. But with mind reading, it feels like there's really no way. And also with mind reading, there's also a slightly pernicious and interesting idea that people maybe want it to be real. Unlike, you know, sleight of hand magic or something else, with mind reading, I think a lot of people, even quite educated and you know, knowledgeable people, are on some level a little curious and maybe hope that mind reading or something like that is real in some respect.
Yeah, it's fascinating. By the way, I just got to close the circle on this. Given the option, forget the pragmatism. If you have the option of give me 35 people a few shows a night or give me 2,000 people for a show, do you come alive with one over the other, or they're both equal for you?
Look, I love both. I really do. But where I'm at right now with what I want to say with magic, it's definitely that smaller crowd. I think At the end of the day, what I want to do is make something that I think I would enjoy. And for me, what I would enjoy, especially after the last few years that we've all collectively had, I think being able to have something intimate, something that feels like you're a part of it, is quite valuable at this point. And we're getting that feedback as well. We're getting from a lot of people that, I mean, you saw the show, you saw that it's a room of strangers that come in, but by the time the show is done, it's a room of friends. Like people are talking to each other. They're making jokes about each other. There's running gags and, you know, they leave as a group. And to be completely honest, I think that's actually the goal of the show. Putting aside everything about the gambling and everything mm-hmm. about the sleight of hand, which I'm very passionate about, what I'm trying to do is to bring people into a room together and make friends. And you would have seen that in a million different small ways, but especially how I'm recalling everyone's name and, you know, drawing dot connects between people, all of that kind of stuff. So I think at this point, definitely those close-up shows are great, but, you know, we're certainly looking to do larger scale shows at some point.
Yeah, and part of my review, I also made the comment that, you know, there are people who are uncomfortable, you know, in those kind of settings. And I just made the point that although you ask people to interact with you, nothing threatening about it, nothing, you don't make fun of anybody, you don't, you know, I mean, really. And I imagine, do you get vibes? If you get a vibe from somebody that they just don't want to be called on, you leave them alone?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a good thing here, which was like, you know, my mom, who I talk about in the show, she took me to a lot of magic shows when I was a kid, and we went to like a public magic show in Sydney, and the magician brought her up to be an assistant for something, and he was not polite to her. He made a few inappropriate jokes, and she was clearly uncomfortable. And it was an interesting experience for me as kind of a budding performer to watch my mum be on stage and be uncomfortable. And then I realized that anyone who I ask to be involved in my show, they're someone's mum, or they're someone's daughter, or they're someone's son or brother. They're someone's something. And so I completely understand the like terror when a magician is like, you're going to come help me. And it's like, I would rather die. But that being said, I don't know what I don't know. I've yet in the Chicago run, especially, had anyone say no, I think, because I think it's part of my job is to make people feel comfortable, especially in that intimate setting. So, you know, I'd like to think I haven't asked anyone to help with the show under duress, but I do respect it if they don't want to do it.
Yeah, and by the way, I haven't said this. The show is going on in the Merrill Ruskin Theater, the Steppenwolf Garage Space, as it's known, which, by the way, if you get a chance to go next door and see the show Purpose, which is playing there, I'm interviewing
I think we're lining that up. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And you know, being in the Steppenwolf space is just an incredible Chicago and national thing to do. Am I right? This is your first visit. This is like your first appearance in the States?
Look, I've traveled for work in the States before to do private entertainment, like corporate or private entertainment. But this is the first time we've done a public show. Okay. This show has traveled all over Australia. We trialed it originally in 2018 at Adelaide Fringe, where we were just hammering out shows and just trying to figure out what this show was. And ever since then, it's appeared in all of these interesting little spots. I've done the show as a one-off in a lot of strange locations over the years. But being able to do a run like this, and especially at Steppenwolf, where like I've been a fan of Steppenwolf since I was like a teenager. So like being able to be a part of it and meet the Steppenwolf team, it's kind of absurd. Like I'm just waking up every day feeling like $1 million, you know, despite the incoming snow, which I think is about to be coming in, which
don't worry,
I am not
too
used
late
to.
For anything to too late for anything to be serious in the snow.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed you've got cards in your hands. I'm kind of glad that you do. Now, you were at our WGN-TV studios just the other day with my friends Tanya and Amy doing the daytime.
I was. I had a great time with them, yeah.
Great. My studio is actually right next door to theirs.
Oh, cool.
But I cover politics, so I can't have you on. Well, I mean, arguably, cheating, we could have you on, but it's all part of the same mold. But since you have cards, can I – because people may, you know, we're talking about what you're doing, but I think showing people what you're doing. Now, there are people who watch this interview and there are people who are going to listen to it. So if you want to demonstrate something for us, talk it through as well for those who are not watching.
Yeah, for sure.
What you're doing. And I don't know if you're going to do that. Well, you've already been Well, I think you're shuffling, but now that I know you, just because you look like you're shuffling doesn't mean that's what you're doing.
Well, that's right. I mean, I thought you might be interested in that because, yeah, I've just been shuffling this deck kind of casually in my hands for the last couple of minutes. But Paul, because Paul's seen the show, Paul knows that that's not really what's going on. So I've managed, I think, to retain the order of the deck there.
I'm looking, you've got everything divided by suit and by number. It's all stayed. Everything is spade two through the king and the whole or ace through the king. Yet you've been, as you say, people who've been watching us, you've been sitting and shuffling and doing it. And there's an argument that there's no way. And you're doing it again now for people who are watching. And yet nothing is changing.
Yeah.
Now, do you get to tell us like,
So this is an example of something that we talk about in the show. So, you know, just being able to do something like a false shuffle, which is what that was, it's really the backbone of pretty much the entire show. So I can show you with it in my hands. I'm doing one of these old overhand shuffles that you would have seen, like a lot of people do this when they play bridge and things like that. And it should, for all the world, look like a real shuffle. It should really look like I'm just taking cards and letting them kind of fall off like that. But this isn't what we call an optical shuffle, which means that one way of thinking about it is that it's kind of like throwing a boomerang in the sense that it technically is out of your control for a short while. But as long as your technique is right, it will come back around. So as I start to shuffle,
are there moments that they're not in order?
Yeah, yeah. So right now they're not in order. And then when I finish, now they're back in order, and which just seems like a very strange thing. But if I leave the cards face up, and I'll make sure to describe this for the people that are just listening, but if I slow this way down, this is what this looks like when I slow it down.
But you're not actually doing anything.
Yeah, so all that's happening is that I've got the deck in two halves, and I'm mimicking the action of an overhand shuffle with my thumb and the whole thing, but the cards just aren't moving at all. If I leave them face down, because all the backs are the same, right, it should start to really look like they're being mixed, right? It's a very strange thing. Really what it is an optical illusion. It's just an optical illusion where the movement really starts to infer, and it's an attitude thing as well. So, you know, if I were to say, you know, really not even pay attention to the cards at all, look at you, maybe even be a bit distracted while I'm looking around and, you know, I'll kind of fumble them a little bit and not really care what I'm doing. That attitude around it makes it even more fooling, right? It's an odd thing.
Now, like I said, you show us, you tell me what you're doing. I can't do it. But you even said some of the things that you read about in a book, you talked to an expert, I think a woman in Australia who said one particular technique would take you've told us 3 years. She didn't tell you the truth because it took you longer.
That's true. Yeah. So we talk about memorization techniques in the show. And the reason why is because card counting, right, which is, you know, how you play blackjack very well. Some people would call it cheating, but that's not true. I set out to learn how to memorize the order of a deck of cards in under a minute, and it's something that I do in every show. It's one of those things where, I sought out experts. I mean, I can zoom this out. Like something really worth saying is that the show really is a display of a bunch of different skills that I stubbornly refused to give up on. Like it's, I say this in the show, but it's like everything in the show is the result of a dedication rather than, you know, a gift or something like that. Like it's stuff that I decided I wanted to learn and then stubbornly refused to give up on until I had it down. So like, there's an old idea that I like, and I'll see, I can get an example for you here. There's a nice old idea. Yeah, I'll stand up for this if I may.
Okay.
So this is something that took quite a bit of time for me to learn as well. And it's a gambling move where you would gesture like that and you can switch the card.
So you held up a two of hearts, your hand did seemingly nothing.
I just gestured to there. Yeah. And it should look like that card just doesn't leave my hand at all, right? And it's in this gesture action. I won't go into any more detail than this, but just for the people that are only listening, I'm holding one card in my hand. I gesture with the other hand past it, and that's what switches that card in that hand.
Now, is that a magic trick or a card cheating trick?
That's a really good question. And I guess, like, really the show is about trying to figure out, is there a difference between those two? Is there something about a gambling secret that means it's more satisfying to learn? Is there something about a magic secret that we should respect the sanctity of, the secret of, in some respect? I mean, and I don't really have an answer for that. I have ever evolving thoughts about, you know, what constitutes, you know, spoiling a secret, and what constitutes, you know, giving it away. I mean, it's something that Penn and Teller have been kind of dallying with for their entire career as well. But I think, you know,
have you met Penn and Teller, by the way?
I've never met them. I'm huge fans of them, and I know a lot of people that work with them and work for them. But I admire them both so much. And they are definitely the people that influenced me the most in finding my own voice with what I want to do with magic as well. Like they were the first magicians I saw where I realized that you could say something with your magic, as opposed to just coming out and saying, "Hey, look how clever I am. And look, here's a box and it does this thing. And now let's do another trick." There are great magicians that do that, and that's really good entertainment. But they made me realize that you could actually have something to say and potentially challenge an audience to maybe change their mind about something. And I think one of the pieces of feedback we've been getting, because you guys are getting a casino very soon here in Chicago.
Maybe.
And I think
funding issue.
I'll hold back on that. But it is interesting. Like, I think some people are surprised in the show that I actually speak quite frankly about the dangers of gambling, and maybe that it's not as sexy as people think it could be. I think some people are kind of surprised that I have that opinion, or you know, but it's the kind of thing where when you live in this world as I have, you start to realize kind of what's really going on, what's really at stake with these things, and what the purpose of a casino actually is when it gets introduced into a city.
By the way, one of the great things is, you know, and the energy, we talk about Penn and Teller, the entertainment piece is so important. They were recently at the Chicago Theater. I went there and, you know, hundreds of people. I actually spent 45 minutes or so with Teller in his dressing room ahead of time. So I will tell you two things. He talks and he swears a lot.
Yes, he does. Yeah. I mean, you know, Teller is an increasingly quite vocal in the magic community.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
He's had a lot of very interesting things to say over the years. And for the most part, I think as he's getting older, maybe that keeping that a secret is starting to matter a bit less. And maybe it's not, I think everyone kind of knows that he talks in his private life, but he's certainly come out swinging quite a few times in the magic community, in sometimes in smaller circles, sometimes in larger ones, but he feels very strongly about magic. And I think he certainly challenged me quite a few times and inspired me quite a few times with maybe an essay he's written or an introduction to a book or something like that. He's a fascinating person. Yeah.
Have you ever thought of, you know, going on Fool, doing something to go on Fool Us?
There's no point not giving an honest answer to this. I think the show is great, and I think that show has done a huge amount for a lot of magicians out there. I personally don't really care. I understand that it's a way for people to advertise themselves and get their name out there, and I think that's great, much in the same way that you could go on America's Got Talent or that kind of thing. But after some soul searching and some thought, it's just not for me. It's not the kind of thing that I really want to focus on. I'm not that interested in fooling other magicians. There's a lot of magicians out there that are. There's a lot of great magicians right now that you see at the conventions, and they've got beautiful, clean, crisp sleight of hand and a brand new gimmick and a brand new idea that does some amazing, mind-boggling piece of magic. And the magic community is built off wonderful thinkers and new innovators like that. I think that's great. At the moment, for me, I'm really just focused on connecting with an audience and trying to do something vulnerable and honest with an audience. And it is interesting meeting some magicians where they'll come watch the show and then maybe have some thoughts for me, because magicians love to give unsolicited advice to other magicians. And they'll have advice about like the card tricks. Maybe don't close close with this trick, maybe close with that trick. And I'm waiting for them to maybe talk about what I'm saying in the show or some of the scripting I've got, or maybe some, you know, but they're not picking up on that. Others do. Others understand that I think there is a thing more important than magic being fooling, which is an authentic connection with an audience and saying something real and honest. And it doesn't mean that those two things are mutually exclusive. I'd like to think the show is fooling. I'd like to think the show has fooling moments for magicians as well, but I haven't designed any of my work around that. So I have been asked, you know, at some point there was a little while ago where I was in discussions with Fool Us. I think it's, unless I really found something I wanted to say, I'm not sure I would, I'm not sure I'd waste their time.
No, I got you. Well, there's another place here called the Rhapsody Theater. It's run by Ricardo Rosencrantz, who is a physician. Maybe you know him, know of him, physician, but he also runs this. It's a magic, it's a beautiful old theater. And does a show. I can just see you're doing your own thing at the Steppenwolf. You should, but you are just so many places here that you would be fantastic. So I guess I hope you come back is what
I would love to come back. I've been really, really enjoying the city. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Great. Just book yourself summer and springs and fall. Those are pretty right. good. So do you when you started out with this thing, was there ever a time in your life where you thought this is, I don't mean this to be a mean question, but where you said, I can do these things. I think I will go in and cheat a casino. Cause you write, there was an interview you did with the Guardian and they sort of talk about you telling a story where some guy said, I made $3,000, except it cost him $5,000 to get there. Was there a time in your life where you said, I'm just going to show people I can do it and be able to say in a show one day, by the way, I made $10,000 in a casino or not. Yeah. That's not who you are.
Look, I've met people who have made a huge amount of money, cheating, and they are still actively a public citizen. They're not behind bars and then they're not missing their thumbs. you pay a pretty high price for that kind of lifestyle. What I talk about in the show, you don't get credit. You know, it's that old idea of like, you'll never hear about the perfect crime, you know? I think, yes, there was a period of time where I thought about that kind of thing. But, you know, I've also seen the rather ugly side of that world. You know, I've never been in an unsafe position, but I've definitely met people who, in certain circumstances, it would not behoove you to be associated with them.
Yeah. It's also not the 1960s anymore, right? You know, Vegas.
No.
So different world.
It's a different world. I think the truth is that while I do have this skill base, when the period of time where I was flirting with going into that world was before I kind of came out of my teenage years, where I was a very shy teenager. I really didn't really know how to connect with people. I really just enjoyed my alone time. So then that lifestyle appealed to me because I didn't need friends. I didn't want friends. And if you want to do this kind of thing, you can't have people close to you in your life. You have to just be free and loose. But then as I got older and I started to enjoy performing more, doing more improv and meeting people and that kind of thing, that just kind of organically went by the wayside in favor of performing.
Yeah,
But then I was stuck with the skill set, so I had to figure out a way to get it out there. You know,
right? And you're doing it. You know, one of the things you talk a lot in the show, I don't want to give a lot of things away because people need to come see you, but you talk a lot about mnemonics and imagination and stuff. When I was growing up, my dad bought this little memory. It was like 9 little paper volumes of things. And what that taught me was, because you triggered it when you talked about it, there's like 100 key words you're supposed to remember. And that's the trick to the device. Remember the words. And it's years later, decades later, key, Noah, May, Ray, Law, Jaw, Key, Fee, P. I still remember so many of those letters. But is it that kind of method, or for you, every time you want to let's tell people, you actually will memorize the order that a deck of cards are in. Is it a predetermined set of words, or how are you doing that in 3 minutes, which is what you're able to do, and you demonstrate that in 3 minutes?
So you have the information is locked in. So the words, I have an image that is a word.
So a five of diamonds will always be the same for you.
Yeah, the five of diamonds would be the physical act of dialing. D-L, so D for diamonds, the L sound for five. And so you have a different image associated with every playing card, a different image associated with the numbers 1 through 52, and then as you start dealing through the deck, you associate the word you have for the number 1 with the playing card that comes at that position. And it sounds bonkers. It sounds like, first of all, it sounds like it's more time consuming, like it's more steps.
Yeah, it doesn't sound bonkers to me, but I don't see how you do it in 3 minutes.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, when I first started learning how to do it, it would take me 3 hours and I'd only get it half right. But I knew through talking to people who were smarter than me that if I stuck with it and just quietly practiced it every day over a certain amount of time, I would be able to be proficient at it. And it's one of those things where the challenge with it was not learning the skill. The skill is quite attainable. As you can see, that stuff sticks in your head pretty organically.
Yeah.
The challenge of it was being okay with being bad at it for a long stretch of time. That was the challenge, was being bad at it for years and just feeling like you're barely making progress and just barely getting ahead of it. But trusting that with enough time, it's something that you'll become proficient at. And so the question kind of then became for me, once I started to realize that was what, because that's what really what my life is at this point, is deciding I'm going to develop something new and then waiting and just practicing. So there's things I'm working on right now that no one's going to see for 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years. And I just have to trust that the time will pass anyway. And so
techniques that you've learned, you're creating techniques.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, as you get more proficient at this kind of stuff, you start to think, well, this would suit me more. This suits my style of thinking more. So yeah, I've tweaked certain parts of what's called the mnemonic major, which is encoding words in numbers and images to suit my own sensibility, which means that now my system is only for me. So like people have asked, can you teach this stuff? And it's like, well, I can teach the basics, but then it's up to you to take that ball and run with it from there.
Sounds like a book in the future. definitely want to write something. When you do this, if it's an unfair question, you can tell me. There are moments in your show where you seem to, you get quiet for a moment. It's almost like your mind has gone somewhere. You've thought about something. And yet, and I keep thinking every moment of that, you're not actually losing track of what you're doing. Or are you? Are there moments where you lose track? Mm. Or it just, there's these, you know what I'm talking about? These silent moments.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I thought, no, you're doing something.
I mean, I think that's part of the fun of the show, I think, is people are looking at me just being like, this crafty son of a bitch. Like, what's he doing next? Like that kind of thing. But, you know, people ask me, are there mistakes in the show, or there's organic moments in the show, maybe things don't go perfectly right, that kind of thing. And they say, is that on purpose? The truth is that when I first designed the show, I understood, because I perform for a living, that dramatically there needed to be stakes in what I was doing. There needed to be a context around it for it to make sense. So I needed to do things that were, so when I first designed the show, there were mistakes built into the show that were fake. But very, very quickly, I realized that it was much better for me to actually try things that had a risk to it and just understand that even a complete failure within the context of a show going well, is roughly dramatically as interesting as things going right.
Well, it's absolutely fantastic. The show, I want people to know, the show is called The Unfair Advantage. You can get tickets at unfairadvantage.show. That's an interesting dot afterwards. Unfairadvantage.show, playing through April 21st. I hope it'll stay longer, but people got to get their tickets before then. You're in the Steppenwolf Garage space. You're absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. Break legs. I want to come see you again.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Same here.